Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 18th, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, let me change a few things here. We're going to be reading in the Gospel of John, picking up in the Gospel of John. We read chapter 5 last week. We'll be looking at chapter 6, read by Alexander Scorby. John, chapter 6, by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 6. After these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great multitude followed him, because they saw his miracles, which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes, and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip, Whence shall we buy bread that these may eat? And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 pennyworth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, There is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many? And Jesus said, Make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes, as much as they would. When they were filled, he said unto his disciples, Gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together, and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, This is of a truth that prophet that should come into the world. When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when even was now come, his disciples went down unto the sea, and entered into a ship, and went over the sea toward Capernaum. And it was now dark, and Jesus was not come to them. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. So when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, they see Jesus walking on the sea and drawing nigh unto the ship, and they were afraid. But he saith unto them, It is I, be not afraid. Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at the land whither they went. The day following, when the people which stood on the other side of the sea saw that there was none other boat there, save that one whereinto his disciples were entered, and that Jesus went not with his disciples into the boat, but that his disciples were gone away alone, howbeit there came other boats from Tiberias nigh unto the place where they did eat bread, after that the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took shipping and came to Capernaum, seeking for Jesus. And when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when camest thou hither? Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me, not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For him hath God the Father sealed. Then said they unto him, What shall we do that we might work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, This is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom he hath sent. They said therefore unto him, What sign showest thou then, that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. And Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you that ye also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that every one which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. The Jews then murmured at him, because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. And they said, Is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it then that he saith, I came down from heaven? Jesus therefore answered and said unto them, Murmur not among yourselves. No man can come to me, except the Father which hath sent me draw him, and I will raise him up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, And they shall be all taught of God. Every man therefore that hath heard and hath learned of the Father cometh unto me. Not that any man hath seen the Father, save he which is of God, he hath seen the Father. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me hath everlasting life. I am that bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. The Jews therefore strove among themselves, saying, How can this man give us his flesh to eat? Then Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, ye have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As the living Father hath sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me. This is that bread which came down from heaven. Not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead. He that eateth of this bread shall live forever. These things said he in the synagogue, as he taught in Capernaum. Many therefore of his disciples, when they had heard this, said, This is an hard saying. Who can hear it? When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said unto them, Doth this offend you? What, and if ye shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before? It is the Spirit that quickeneth. The flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit, and they are life. But there are some of you that believe not. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed not, and who should betray him. And he said, Therefore said I unto you, that no man can come unto me except it were given unto him of my Father. From that time many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. Then said Jesus unto the 12, Will ye also go away? Then Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life, and we believe and are sure that thou art that Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus answered them, Have not I chosen you 12? And one of you is a devil. He spake of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, for he it was that should betray him, being one of the 12.
Okay, I'm going to check this recording button. It looks like it's off, doesn't it? Let me see. Okay, I guess the recording was started. So, all right, now let me clear my desk here. Okay, Terry, do we have any announcements or any questions?
I think Jan has it tonight.
Okay, Jan?
Okay, finally got unmuted. Yes, I have quite a few questions. The first says, a republic is a nation of laws. Do you need a court system to restore our constitutional republic?
Do we need a court system? Ask that question again.
A republic is a nation of laws. Mm-hmm. Do we need a court system to restore our constitutional republic?
Well, we need a court system that is common law court system set up in order that we can have justice and that we can have a constitutional republic. A constitutional republic requires a court system, so if that's the question, yes. There's not too much. Once devolution plays out, and it does seem, I'm sure a lot of us have been listening very closely and to a lot of things being said, and the things do seem to be very close, so hopefully very, very close. Once that takes place, of course, then we will have the ability to take our court system back and return it back to a common law court. I don't think any judge or anybody will be able to get into the way of that, including the United States Supreme Court, who has violated pretty much our Constitution themselves. They have taken on authority that they do not have. They've taken on cases that they should not be discussing. For instance, Roe versus Wade. That court case never belonged to go to the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court is a court of equity. It is not a court of law. It is to champion the law. It is to champion the Constitution and to send cases back into courts of law if we're not getting due process and require and command of the judges in the lower courts to be obedient to the Constitution and provide for that due process and provide and allow for a court of law to proceed. Whether... The United States Supreme Court did not have the power to step on God's toes, literally. This was a situation concerning the life of an unborn child, and that belongs in a court of law. That's God's domain. That's God's jurisdiction. It certainly is not equity jurisdiction. It did not belong in the United States Supreme Court. So all of these decisions that are unconstitutional, unlawful, will be revisited quite quickly, I think, as time proceeds over the first year or two after devolution. I think a lot is going to change. We have an opportunity to take back our nation, to have a republic again, to require those individuals that we've had elected to be obedient to the Constitution, to require that Congress remove any and all judges, or in a federal level, let's say, any and all judges or anybody that is appointed under any condition that is not in good behavior, for they cannot serve any longer if they're in bad behavior. The Constitution is clear. For instance, judges, and that includes everyone, serves as long as they are in good behavior. Good behavior is obedient to the Constitution, obedient to the law of the land. That's good behavior. Step outside of that, you're no longer in good behavior, and you need to be removed from your position, whether it be a judge or whether you even be a congressman or even a senator or any holding any position anywhere for that matter. And that goes right on down, all the way down to the state level and to the town level, right down to the grassroots. So good behavior, again, is obedient to the Constitution, and that's what we need to require. We have so many judges in a federal level, and this is the state level also. Again, on the state level, it's the duty of the state Supreme Courts in order to bring those judges back under the control that they are responsible for. And it's up to the legislators of that state, as well as on the federal legislators, for them to maintain and require good behavior from judges or remove them. So there is a process to remove judges that are in bad behavior. Okay, they can be impeached. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. And if they refuse to do that, then we the people have no other choice but to remove them ourselves, and we can remove them through indictment. The only individual elected that we could not remove by indictment would be the president himself. But other than that, we could remove anyone. We can indict anyone. Once a president is, of course, impeached, then, of course, the people can indict. But he cannot be indicted as long as he's in office. But a judge, no matter what, or a senator, or a congressman, or a mayor, or a councilman, or anyone, can be indicted if the legislators refuse to do their duty. And I think that opportunity is going to be quite clear, and we're going to have that opportunity to bring this nation back under a constitutional republic again, to be obedient unto the law, which again is the Constitution. I think next week we're going to take a short look, because I was planning on doing it this week, but I never got through what I was working out, researching, and pulling together. But I wanted to really try to pose questions that might be right kind of questions that we would ask anyone who was running for office if we were going to walk their papers. And so we did last week, I think we did one on interviewing candidates. So I'm going to do a sort of a part two on that. That's going to be very short, but it's going to some kind of questions that you might want to ask. There really isn't much you can ask them, because who cares about their opinion? Certainly I don't care what their opinion is. What I care about is that they're obedient to the law. Are you going to obey the Constitution? You're going to go beyond your jurisdiction. Do you know what your jurisdiction is? Tell me what your jurisdiction is. If you don't know what your jurisdiction is, I'll tell you what your jurisdiction is, and then you need to acknowledge that you're going to be obedient to obeying that jurisdiction, to remain within inside of it, and not to go outside the authority that you'd be given as we the people elect. But the people have to get up and get involved and execute their powers. And if they don't get up to execute their powers, then we will not have liberty. We will not have a constitutional republic. We will not have a court of justice. And they will continue to do whatever they please. And maybe they'll be behaved for a while. But bear in mind, once all these people are removed that have taken controls that the people deserve to have the control of, if the people are too lazy to get up and take control of the controls, to have government by consent, if they continue to be too lazy, if they're too lazy and refuse to get educated and step up and give some of their time and work to get the information necessary to our children in school for what their duty is as one of the people themselves, that they have a duty also to have government by consent and to exercise that government by and through their consent. And if we don't do these things, it'll only be a matter of time, because someone has to fill the void, the power void that will be after devolution. There will be a power void. And right now, the Bar Association controls the courts. They control everything, ultimately, even control the parties, too. They've created all of the statutes and all of the civil laws and different things that they're all obedient to. They created all the rules. They statutorized the committee man. They did all these things. And so it's between the two parties, which is nothing but destruction. That's the only purpose of a two-party system, is to destroy the republic that they have. We are a democracy. We're acting like a democracy where 51% decide what the other 49 are going to have to be obedient to. To decide, and lord over the other 49%. That's what a democracy is. Democracy is mob rule, and its end results is an oligarchy. As a matter of fact, during the process of a democracy, it quite quickly turns into an oligarchy. And America has been an oligarchy since at least the turn of the 20th into the 20th century. At least since then. Goes all the way back, actually goes all the way back to the Revolution. The Revolution never ended. We're still fighting it. It's been covertly fighting, and now it is overt. But anyway, all right. Kind of a long answer, but I took an opportunity to really make a lot of points here on that. And as a matter of fact, tonight we're going to be talking about a republic versus a democracy. Next question.
Okay, what would you need to recreate a free state as stated by Amendment 2?
Amendment 2 of the Constitution. What do we need, what?
What would you need to recreate a free state as stated by Amendment 2?
Well, it's pretty simple, really. I mean, Amendment 2, Second Amendment, of course, you know, is the right to bear arms and of course, the militia. But we don't need that in order to do anything. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, we could have to use that. If Trump didn't get into office and prepare and do the things he did, that would probably be the only solution. But right now, it is up to the military. But it's up to the people to take control. It's very simple. If the people get involved in the grassroots, if the people get educated and come to understand the powers and authorities and to understand the difference between equity and law, the difference between a democracy and republic, and what these people need to be doing. The people don't even know what they should be doing. They don't know what they should be doing. They do whatever they want. So they argue and they debate all these different things that they shouldn't be debating and arguing. It's none of their business. We don't need any more rights. We already have all the rights we need. It's already there. We have unalienable rights. We don't need special rights for special groups. But people are so confused by that. So what we need is people to get involved on the grassroots level. And I mentioned this a couple of weeks I've been mentioning this point, that it's going to take at least 50% of the counties to take control of themselves on the grassroots level to really be able to control the federal level. Maybe less, maybe a little more, but it's going to take quite a bit. It's going to take people to get up together and do what's got to be done. People can take control of themselves and their government on the grassroots level, on the county level. They can collectively working together with at least half of the counties within their states, they can take control of the states. And they probably don't even need half the counties, but we'll say half the counties. You need at least 100 to 200 people. And if you get that many people, trust me, that will grow tremendously very quickly as soon as people start to realize the power and the authority of the people, of their right to have government by consent, to control their government, and to require them to be obedient to their will, to their wishes, to their desires. We've already given them our wishes. We laid out the Constitution. We have state constitutions. And anything in a state constitution that is repugnant to the United States Constitution is simply null and void. And there is a lot in many state constitutions. For instance, let's just take the court system. Civil law is not what we're under. We're under natural law. And yet they apply civil law upon us. So we're living in Babylon is where we're living right now. And the states have followed suit in the same thing. The county courts, the state courts, the town courts, they've all followed suit. We're living ultimately we're living under their control, under their thumb, under their rules, under their law. We're living under civil law. We're living under a statutory prison, ultimately, is what we the people are living under. And until the people realize that statutes have nothing to do with us, regulations, statutes, codes have nothing to do with we the people, and that we the people are the lawmakers, we make the law, we make the decisions in the courts, we decide what is lawful and what is not lawful, we decide who is innocent and who is guilty, we decide whether a law is appropriate or not. And in the cases of an equity situation where there is a crime involved and open in a court of law, we decide whether a particular statute is going to be applied against an individual that is being judged in a court of law. Maybe they're working out of commercial activity and therefore under some kind of a code, regulations, statutes, or they're working for the government, some government agency. We can apply all these against them, but they cannot apply any of those things against us. And until the people realize that, we'll continue to live in a statutory prison under their will, under their thumb. We have to turn that around. And we have to make them to live under our thumb, to be obedient to what we say. For when they fear the people, that's when we will have liberty. When you have someone in office and the chairman, a true chairman, the county, the chairman for the committeemen, which is the committees of safety I'm talking, not the statutory process, but the committeemen of the committee of safety, and the chairman makes a call to the congressman that they walk the papers or not, doesn't matter. they're in office and they get a call, they're going to answer to that that committee man, and they're going to be obedient. And if not, then they could be recalled. So that's the power of the people. We can recall them. We can indict them. We can tell them what they need to do. We can let them know what we expect of them. And so, you know, when we interview people that are running for office and deciding on whether we're going to walk their papers, the designating petitions in order for them to get into office, when we're looking into doing those things, why would we ask them what their opinion is on all this party arguing and debates on things that they have no business even talking about in public? Why bother? No, let's tell them what they need to do. Let's tell them, go learn the Constitution, come back, and let's talk about the Constitution. Let's see what you've learned. And until we start to do that, we're never going to change anything. Any other questions?
Yes. If the people had a common law court system, could they then use the Amendment 7 to demand a common law trial?
You can demand a common law trial anytime you want. It's called a court of record, or it's called really a trial by jury is what it's called, in the sense of it's a dispute, and it's a money dispute or a contract dispute. As long as it's over $20, you cannot be refused, that common law court as far as a jury trial is concerned. Any criminal court requires a common law court. It requires a court by jury. And as a matter of fact, on the one hand, happy to say, on the other hand, sad to say, because a lot of people are going to have to be set free that are guilty of a lot of things. And a lot of people have to be set free because they're not guilty of a lot of things. But once we get onto the other side and we start to take control, we need to demand anybody who was sent to prison by a judge, it's null and void. They have to retry those people. Okay? Judges do not have the power or the authority to incarcerate anyone. Okay? They just don't have that power. That only happens in a court of law. It's the people have the power. You cannot lose your rights of life, liberty. You cannot lose those things unless it's taken away from you by a court of law through, of course, the trial by jury. So that's a problem that's going to have to be dealt with. But as Judge Bork said, for those who remember who Judge Bork is, it's back in the 80s, I believe, late 80s. As Judge Bork said, 80% of the people that are in prison are only there because they opened their mouth. They accepted a plea. That's their problem. You go to court, you don't accept a plea. If there's no jury and they're putting statutes upon you, don't accept a plea. There is no plea to be made. You don't have jurisdiction. They lack. Jurisdiction to some degree, but they don't have personam jurisdiction. They have subject matter jurisdiction, a lot of these courts. For instance, let's take a town court. They have subject matter jurisdiction when you get a ticket for something, but they do not have personam jurisdiction over the people because the people are not operating in commercial activities and therefore they cannot make any judgment upon them. But as long as the people believe that they can and believe that they do and the sheriffs believe that they can and the sheriffs believe that they could do these things, then we'll be continued to be put in jail by people who have no power or authority to do it or fined or incarcerated or whatever the case may be. Next.
What rights were reserved to the people as stated by Amendment 9 and 10?
Well, Amendment 9 ultimately just makes the point that as far as the positioning, let's see, let me just read it here. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not construe or deny or disparage others retained by the people. So that makes the point ultimately that there are many more rights that the people have. And it's very simple. We have a right to do pretty much anything we want as long as we don't injure another individual. We have the right of travel. We don't need licenses to travel. We have a right to travel. We have a right to represent ourselves in court or even represent other people. You can't license our right to be able to go into a courtroom and make an argument. And there are many, many rights, many, many of them. Now, Amendment 10, the power is not delegated to the United States by this Constitution, nor forbidden by it. And that's the key, if it's not forbidden. And by the way, the ruler to all law, ultimately, is the Bill of Rights. anything that violates a right is null and void. That's a key point. We measure the authority, we measure the justice of anything ultimately upon the people by measuring it by our rights, ultimately. But anyway, nor forbidden to it by the states, forbidden by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively and to the people. So any powers that are not delegated in this Constitution, okay, they don't have it. But the states could take those powers that are not delegated here. There are many things that the states should have power over that the federal government should have no say at all. Federal should not be stepping on the toes of the states, only when it's necessary in order to champion the Constitution, to correct and to champion. But other than that, the states have the right to write their own constitutions, and they have, and to take on the powers and the authorities of all commercial activities within the state that's not interstate, all of the jurisdictional or all of the powers and the authorities within the government as far as writing laws, legislation, and applying that legislation within state courts upon people who are working in government. Okay, again, statutes are for government agencies, individuals working in those government agencies, and for commercial activities. That's what statutes, regulations, and statutes, regulations, and codes are for. So, again, the states have the right to write all the codes necessary in order to control all the things that is within their power to control. But they cannot control the people. Neither the state nor the federal government has the power or the authority to control the behavior of the people. If someone wants to stick a needle in their arm and kill themselves by overdosing eventually, we can talk to them, but you can't stop them. Okay, that's their business. They may call it their right to enjoy life or whatever, you know. We don't have a right to intervene on what people want to do, only when it injures another person, you know. For every injury, there must be a remedy. So if you injure someone, the common law requires a remedy, and the remedy would be by the person who made the injury to restore that injured party. And that's what a court of law, of course, is all about. So, again, let's just take a quick look, see if it's forbidden by the states. We see, okay, so anyway, the states have the right, and of course, there are rights that, again, belong to the people and not to the states. And that's pretty simple, pretty clear. Anything that that I have a right to do cannot be restricted, ultimately. My desire. Anyway, hopefully I've answered that question completely. Anything else?
Nope, that's the last question, John.
Okay, any kind of, what do you call it? Anybody has any statements to make or anything? Any announcements? Nothing?
No, not tonight.
Okay. All right, tonight we're going to take a quick look. We're going to do a PowerPoint. It's about 30 minutes long, and then we'll move over to Brent. I see Brent is already here, and I see Gerard's here. But we're going to look at democracy versus a republic. I did a PowerPoint on this. We've looked at this before, but I did another PowerPoint on this. I haven't uploaded it up onto the Internet yet, but I will eventually do that. So, democracy versus a republic. Tyranny naturally rises out of democracy. Plato. Benjamin Franklin said, "A democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch." Thomas Jefferson said, "A democracy is nothing more than mob rule, where 51% of the people may take away the rights of the other 49. Wake up, America. Article 4, Section 4, the United States shall guarantee to every state of this Union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them from invasion. Stop calling us a democracy." There are five basic forms of government. They are monarchy, ruled by one person, oligarchy, ruled by a small handful of people, democracy, ruled by majority of the citizens, republic, ruled by law, and anarchy, no government, mob rule. Presently, there are 159 republics in the world. Among them are China, Russia, Korea, Iran, Iraq, and Cuba. What they all have in common, along with all monarchies, democracies, and oligarchies, and anarchy, is rule by man. Democracies always lead to mob rule and eventually transforms to an oligarchy, often hidden behind the facade, democratic republic, people's republic, socialism, Marxism, communism, or democracy, to name a few. Thomas Jefferson rediscovered a unique type of republic, one ruled by nature's God and not man, mirrored under Israel, that was established by God through Moses in 1400 BC. This was demonstrated by Jefferson and Franklin's proposed seals that expressed Israel's exodus out of Egypt. Jefferson added the backside of the seal representing Israel's common law brought to Britain in the 5th century by two Anglo-Saxons named Hengist and Horsa from the Germanic tribes from the north. Unfortunately, the two-sided seal of the United States were represented by Rome, by an eagle, and Egypt, by a pyramid, whose law traces back to Babylon, the exact opposite of Israel. Jefferson immediately recognized that the law they brought to Britain was in harmony with the Bible. History revealed that the people of Britain, having the Bible, developed a strong bond with the Anglo-Saxons because they were living the principles of the Bible. Jefferson strongly surmised that these people might be the remnants of the lost tribes of Israel. Jefferson also found a connection with the European intellectual movement of the late 17th and 18th centuries, emphasizing reason and individualism rather than tradition. Said movement was driven by philosophers such as Descartes, Locke, and Newton, and its prominent exponents including Kant, Goethe, Voltaire, Rousseau, and Adam Smith. It is under these influences that Jefferson discovered American's freedom formula, writing America's foundation of law, the Declaration of Independence, which placed the fate of America into the hands of the King of Kings, to live under his law and receiving the blessings of his liberty. Our founding fathers were all well-read and believed that they were acting and building a new nation under the providence of God. Our founders believed that the United States was the new Israel of the Bible, as clearly represented by Jefferson and Franklin's proposed seals, and as long as we live under his law, we are. It was through collaboration of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, who fathered the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Thomas Jefferson and James Madison had a rich and long friendship. They collaborated on numerous political ideas and decisions that had shaped our country. Madison first met Jefferson during the Virginia Constitutional Convention in 1776, but it wasn't until 3 years later that the two cemented their friendship, working together daily, while Jefferson served as governor of Virginia and Madison was on the Council of State. Although Jefferson certainly acted as a mentor to Madison, the two men had relatively equal relationship, and they collaborated well. Jefferson and Madison were both deep philosophical thinkers. It is important to realize that the United States is the only republic that is a republic under the authority of God, therefore the only lawful republic in the world. Authority from God, empowering his people. God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it. This is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my laws into their mind, and write them into their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. A covenant with God, America's foundation, Declaration of Independence, where we read, When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of a right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to British Crown, and that all political connections between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may have a right to do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Authority from We the People to Government. Preamble to the Constitution. We the People of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Bill of Rights. The conventions of a number of the states, having at the time of their adoption the Constitution, expressed the desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Declaration of Independence. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants. Article 6, Subsection 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. James Madison. The people have an indubitable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to reform or change their government whenever it be found adverse or inadequate to the purpose of its institution. Samuel Adams. The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will or legislated authority of man, but only to have the laws of nature for his rule. Thomas Jefferson. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. If a government, either by malfeasance or neglect, fails to protect those rights, or even worse, if the government itself begins to violate those rights, then it is the right and duty of the people to regain control of their affairs and set up a form of government which will serve the people better. These rights, which have been bestowed by the Creator, they cannot be altered or eliminated at any time. That is, they cannot be taken away or violated without the offender coming under the judgment and the wrath of the Creator. The Supreme Court of the United States. Under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizens. The state does not claim to control them, except as his or her conduct to others, leaving him or her the sole judge as to all that affects them. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereignty makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the King of Kings, his majesty, God, in the eye of the law is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, which are the jurists, are the mirror by which the king's image, it's God's will, written in their hearts is reflected. For laws are made for us. We are not made for the laws. Every man is independent of all legislative laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institution formed by his fellow man without his consent. We, the people, have been providentially entrusted via natural law to dispense justice and were provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary and our representatives. The people have the unbridled right, by law and in law, to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of information, indictments, and presentments to a court of justice, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding under natural law. Democracy is just the first step to an oligarchy. Article 4, Section 4, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. In 1993, Speaker Representative James Traficken Jr. of Ohio, addressing the House, revealing the bankruptcy of the United States into the congressional record. All United States offices, officials, and departments are now operating with a de facto status in name only under the emergency war's powers. With the constitutional republican form of government now dissolved, the receivers of the bankruptcy have adopted a new form of government for the United States. This new form of government is known as a democracy, being an established socialist communist order under a new governor for America. The word republic comes from the Latin res publica, which means simply the public thing, or more simply, the law. Democracy, on the other hand, is derived from the Greek words demos and kratein, which translates to the people to rule. Democracy, therefore, has always been synonymous with majority rule. Therefore, we are a republic which is ruled by law, or a democracy ruled by the Marxist mob. Our founding fathers reviled democracy and gave their posterity a republic. As Thomas Jefferson said, the republican is the only form of government which is not eternally at open or secret war with the rights of mankind. Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives. James Madison. It's time that we, the people, change the narrative. The inauguration of Thomas Jefferson as president was a monumental moment in American, even world history. Every detail of the day was analyzed, from Jefferson's decision to walk to the event instead of riding in a carriage, to his plain dress instead of a fancy suit and a sword. However, the most important part of the whole affair was the one line uttered in the middle of his first inaugural address. He said, "We are all Republicans. We are all Federalists." This was Thomas Jefferson's way of shouting from the rooftops that this was a nation of law and not of men. Federalist Papers, number 1, Hamilton. The necessity of a government at least equally energetic with the one proposed to the attainment of this object, the conformity of the proposed Constitution to the true principles of a republican government in its equivalence to our state constitutions. Federalist Paper number 10, Madison. Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Federalist Paper number 48. In a democracy where a multitude of people exercise in person the legislative functions and are continually exposed by their incapacity for regular deliberation and concerted measures to the ambitious intrigues of their executive magistrates, tyranny may well be apprehended when some favorable emergency to start up in the same quarter. Anti-Federalist, number 74. There is not a tincture of democracy in the proposed Constitution, except the nominal elections. Every free man of America ought to hold up this idea to himself, and he has no superior but God and the laws, as indication that something has been present. Anti-Federalist, number 10. True Democrats are in general fanatics and enthusiasts, and some few sensible, charming madmen. Anti-Federalist, number 18 and 20. A confederacy of republics must be the establishment in America, or we must cease together to retain the republican form of government. From the moment we became one great republic, either in form or substance, the period is very shortly removed when we shall sink first into a monarchy and then into despotism. Before we established a government whose acts will be the supreme law of the land and whose power will extend to almost every case without exception, we ought carefully guard ourselves by a Bill of Rights against the evasion of these liberties, which it is essential for us to retain, which it is of no real use for government to deprive us of, but which in the course of human events have been too often insulted with the wantonness of an idled bar of the tree. Auburn Herbert, a 19th century British politician and writer, described democracy like this. 5 men are in a room. Because 3 men take one view and 2 another, have the 3 men any moral right to enforce their view on the other 2 men? What magical power comes over the 3 men that because they are one more in number than the 2 men, therefore they suddenly become possessors of the minds and the bodies of these others? As long as they were 2 or to 2, so long we suppose each man remained master of his own mind and body. But from the moment that another man, acting heaven only knows from what motives, has joined himself to one party or the other, that party has become straightway possessed of the souls and the bodies of the other party. Was there ever such a degrading and indefensible superstition? It is not the true lineal descendants of the old superstitions about emperors and high priests and their authority over the souls and bodies of men. We constantly hear congressmen, senators, presidents, and even the United States Supreme Court justices refer to America as a democracy. Are our elected servants that ignorant of our Constitution, our history, and our heritage? Or is there a methodical covert conspiracy hell-bent on destroying our republic? Just how close are we? Or should I say, how close were we? I think the following says it all. When President Barack Obama, during the 2016 White House Correspondents' Dinner, where he predicted Hillary Clinton's presidency in 2017, said, "The end of the Republic has never looked better." And then the unexpected happened. By God's mercy and divine providence, the coup failed, and President Trump was elected in her stead and declared in contrast. In America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs. The word democracy appears nowhere in the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, or its capstone Bill of Rights. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution guarantees to every state of the Union a republican form of government. James Madison, known as the father of the Constitution, states, "We ought to exist under republican constitutions," referencing both the federal constitution and the state constitutions, not constitutions under a democracy. Government by the multitude is a form of government wherein the populace has the whole power and administration of its own hands. The abuse of democracy is mob rule. With the introduction of representative democracy, which is a form of government where the powers of sovereignty are delegated to a body of men elected from time to time who exercise them for the benefit of the whole nation. Which such a democracy, unshackled by law and constitution, the results would be absolute tyranny. They already ignore our constitution in this case, and our efforts are over the past 20 years proving. But the times, they are changing. There is a new sheriff in town. The swamp is being drained, the people are rising, and the resisters of the law will be tried in a court of law for treason. In a republic, a constitution or charter of rights protects certain unalienable rights that cannot be taken away by the government, even if it has been elected by a majority of voters. In a democracy, the majority is not restrained in this way and can impose its will on the minority. Although we chose most of our representatives and local heads and states and judges democratically, they're all governed by the law of the land, which restricts their powers and jurisdictions in order to conform to the will of the people through the Constitution by authority vested in the people via natural law, therein God. Unlimited democracy is just like oligarchy, a tyranny spread over a large number of people. Aristotle. In a 1786 letter to the Marquis de Lafayette, George Washington wrote about the risks of democracy. He didn't believe that most people could be trusted to make good decisions. Thomas Jefferson said, "Democracy is nothing more than mob rule where 51% of the people may take away the rights of the other 49%. Benjamin Franklin said, "Democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the votes." James Madison, the father of the Constitution, said, "Democracy is evil because it allows the will of many to trample the rights of the few. Democracies have been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths." Benjamin Rush thought democracy was devilish, stating, "A simple democracy is the devil's own government." Hamilton said, "We are a republican government. Real liberty is never found in despotism or in the extremes of democracy. The ancient democracies in which the people themselves deliberated never possessed one good feature of government. Their very character was tyranny, their figure deformity. If we incline too much to democracy, we shall soon shoot into a monarchy." John Adams said, democracy will soon degenerate into an anarchy, such an anarchy that every man will do what is right in his own eyes, and no man's life or property or reputation or liberty will be secure, and every one of these will soon mold itself into a system of subordination of all the moral virtues and intellectual abilities, all the powers of wealth, beauty, wit, and science, to the wanton pleasures, the capricious will, and the execrable cruelty of one or very few. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. John Marshall said, between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos. John Jay said, too many love pure democracy dearly. They seem not to consider that pure democracy, like pure rum, easily produces intoxication, and with 1,000 mad pranks and fooleries. John Quincy Adams said, the experience of all former ages hath shown that of all human governments, democracy was the most unstable, fluctuating, and short-lived. Edmund Burke said, of this I am certain, that in a democracy, the majority of the citizens is capable of exercising the most cruel oppression upon the minority. Winston Churchill said, the best argument against democracy is a 5-minute conversation with the average voter. Stop calling us a democracy. As President Trump said, in America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take the power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs. The problem is that the people don't know how to take and implement that power. Thomas Jefferson said, I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional powers. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole masses of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. Join us at nationallibertyalliance.org to learn the science of government by consent and receive the power, your heritage. Join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org/county-sheriff-project. Join us to save a republic by learning the science of government by consent. Come to our weekly live open forums every Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. Take our free civics course. Learn real American history. Take our government by consent course. Learn how to file a court case. Learn the difference between law and equity. Learn the Constitution. Learn natural law, also known as common law. Learn the true meaning of liberty. Learn how we, the people, can reinstate our natural law courts of justice. As Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. Okay, by the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and a 1, to get into the queue, *6 and a 1. I'm going to pass the board over to Gerard. Gerard, are you there? And I'm going to introduce Brent, and he's going to take the mic for a while. Gerard? All right, well, I'm sure he'll be here shortly. Let me move over to Brent. Brent, are you ready?
Hey, I'm here. Can you hear
okay.
me?
You got the board. Let me introduce Brent, and then you take the board. Okay?
Yeah.
I'll be here in the background, too. Anybody's got a question or a comment, a correction or anything, *6 and a 1 to get into our queue, *6 and a 1. Brent, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. This is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law, and other books. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Well, thank you, John. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com, and you can go to the website and see what we're doing there. I offer law school courses and books. I'd like to talk a little bit today about those that approach the law and for some reason, all of a sudden, know everything about everything. And I receive these kinds of questions, and not questions, no comments, usually telling me off, and telling me how incredibly ignorant I am. And I thought I'd read a few of them to you. Of course, I have a policy of telling these people, if you want to sign up for one of our law courses, you can do that. And then you have the privilege of asking questions and making nasty comments. But if you don't sign up, I'm not going to entertain your nasty comments. Now, this fellow says this. The United States grand jury system has nothing to do with common law. Why are you mixing the law? This is misleading to someone trying to study the common law. There is no criminal jurisdiction in the several states. They have a single jurisdiction under Amendment 7 and 11, law or equity. But I'm glad that people send these kind of things to me, and if I want to, I can use them as jumping off points to discuss the law, so we can get good out of anything and make a straight lick with a crooked stick. I'll respond to these for the enjoyment of it. The grand jury system, says this fella, has nothing to do with with common law. I don't know where in the Sam Hill he gets that idea. The only thing I can figure is he's been reading somebody who is a self-proclaimed teacher of the law that has not taken any time to look into the matter. Yes, the grand jury is the creature of our common law. There are no juries in the rest of the world. Only in our common law tradition do we have juries. We have grand jury. That's law French for big jury, grande. You hear that kind of talk at the coffee shop these days. And then the petite jury, that's the trial jury. Here in America, we sometimes say the petty jury, or just the trial jury. Petite means the little jury, the small jury in the Norman French tongue, which became the tongue of the country of England for a few centuries. And that's how all these French words get into our got into our common law tradition. The people that invaded England back in the 11th century had picked up the French tongue while living in a place called Normandy. And they called it Normandy because it was on the coast of France, and they were from Norway. They had conquered the coast of France. And then, like a lot of people that conquer, they end up getting conquered culturally. Like the Romans conquered the Greeks militarily, but the Greeks conquered and utterly decimated and destroyed the Romans culturally with all their hogwash, all their scholasticism, all of their logic, all of their philosophers, etc. And that's why Rome went down. They got more interested in the finer things in life, the toga, the bath, and along with that, of course, came sodomy and a whole lot of their weird and sick human behaviors that we'd better off probably be not discussing. Right now, anyway, in mixed company, I should say. Well, no, the grand jury is a creature of our common law. It's the big one. It's usually 15 to 23 members, depending upon whether state or federal grand jury. Well, let's see what else this fella says. He's helping us out here, giving us something to talk about. He says this: you are teaching a course, you're going to teach a course on common law trust. You should be teaching estates in common due to the tax claim under 643B and of Title 26. Well, I, just for the record, I don't give much of a hoot and a holler at all about any code, how much less the tax code. There's no interpreting it. It doesn't mean what you think it means, and I don't care how persnickety you are about parsing 643B of Title 26. It means, it'll end up meaning what the bureaucrat says it means, and if you don't conform, he's going to take what you have. As my friend says, the policy of the law of the city, the civil canon laws of Rome, is we're going to kick your butt and take your stuff. And that's what would happen in this case. Well, let's see. Here's another one. Now, this fellow just gave me a whole string of these, skinning me up one side and down the other. He said, you are teaching the U.S. Declaration. This is not true. Well, that's a new one. The Declaration was made by the people of the several states of the United States of America, not the United States. See Bouvier's United States of America. See 28 U.S.C. 3002 for United States. These terms are not interchangeable. Well, number one, I don't need a Frenchman telling me what the common law says. And Bouvier was a Frenchman. Not that I'm against the man. I'm amazed how patriots quote Bouvier. He was a Frenchman that was happy to be an American and overwhelmed with the idea of the common law, but it doesn't mean he understands any of it. Of course, he understood a lot of it, but bottom line is, Bouvier is not the final word on anything. Why people quote him that way, how that got started, I have no idea. Oh, he's okay. I admire him. He worked real hard. He wanted to promote the right ideas, but I've never read any book, including my own, by the way, that didn't have mistakes in it. And wrongheadedness, except the Bible. I should say, except the Bible. I haven't found any mistakes or conflicts in it anywhere. I've been looking at it for a long time. But here's I'm teaching the U.S. Declaration, and this is not true. And then he says, I'm going to read this again. The Declaration was made by the people of the several states of the United States of America, not the United States. Now, if you can explain that to me, I'll give you a gold star. I've heard people say this for years too, making distinction between the several states, United States, not United States of America, and on they go. And they keep going on and on. And the people that do that, the evil empire and the useful idiots of it, got them right where they want them, fighting over nothing. Doesn't mean nothing. Ain't a judge on the bench in America would have a clue what you're talking about if you said that. And the reason they don't have a clue about it is because it's not true. These distinctions are useless. They're meaningless. This particular one, I shouldn't say all. Distinctions are important. Here's another one he writes. Laws are based on God's law. This is not biblical law. I assume he's saying God's law is not biblical law. And then he says, common law is the Ten Commandments primarily. I don't know where he gets that assertion. He seems to be pretty confident about it. The only other thing from the Bible is the principles of charity. Well, nothing wrong with charity, but still I'm not following him. This is not connecting. The jury at common law is interpreting the Ten Commandments. I don't know where he gets that either. Is that in the Bible someplace? I haven't found it. I've been at it a long time. I've been at it hard for over 40 years. I haven't seen a thing that says that. Not the Bible, he says. That would be biblical law. Well, that's nice. I guess biblical law would be law from the Bible, but he says the common law is the Ten Commandments primarily. Just for the record, that is flatly false. The common law is the Ten Commandments. No, the common law is anything but the Ten Commandments. The common law is not the Ten Commandments. The common law is due process, period. The common law is not the end result standards that God gives us. Those are good standards, but that's not the common law. The common law tells us how we decide who has violated those end result standards called the Ten Commandments. And by the way, they're not even commandments. They're infinitive absolutes in the Hebrew text. They're standards, end result standards, the proclamation of them. Well, that was enjoyable, I hope. It gives me an opportunity. Again, I appreciate this fellow sending these comments. I'm not against him. No, he helps me out. Let me look at some other. He says a lot of things. I get a lot of communication from him. Here's some more. This is a long one. Under our original form of government, he says, was a member of the civil government. The people were an independent group acting in the capacity of a common law form of government. No, it's not a form of government. It is a common law government. We're not even primarily a republic. We have republican form of government, a common law, as our Constitution says, form, F-O-R-M. But we are not fundamentally republic in that sense. It's the form that our Constitution insists upon, and that means that we've seated a legislative body. That's what that means. And this fellow says this: there is a balance. The police power, that's administrative government, the judicial power of the civil law courts, he says, the legislature, part of the civil government, the people, this is common law government, with a jury trial. And then he says, what we have done is failed to keep our political power. Well, tell me something I don't know. We are not using common law courts to balance and control. Tell me again, as if we didn't know that. The Seventh Amendment is very powerful. Yes. When have you ever seen anyone use it? We own a giant cannon and don't know how to operate it. And then he goes on to say that we should tell the states that use the Seventh Amendment to get a common law trial by jury. Well, let's talk about that for just a minute. The Seventh Amendment of the Constitution of the United States was never intended to apply to anything that happened within the states of the United States. Let me repeat that. Well, let me say it about the whole Constitution. The whole Constitution, every word, every phrase, every letter, every amendment, every article, not one shred of it did they intend to apply to state government. It was written to apply to the general government in Washington, D.C., period. And the whole reason that the folk that ratified that Constitution of the United States, the only reason they ratified it was to apply it only to the general government in Washington, D.C. And the reason they did that, they didn't want the general government in Washington, D.C. to get out of its box They put it in a box, and that box is the Constitution of the United States, and it limits that general government to almost a corn nubbin. Nothing left, hardly. Of course, it's gotten out of the box in no small way. But the Seventh Amendment does not apply to the courts of the states. You go into the courts of the states and demand jury trial under the Seventh Amendment, you're just wasting your time. That's utterly impossible as a matter of law that that would apply to courts of the 50 states of the United States, because the federal government has absolutely no control, and the Constitution of the United States has no limiting power to the courts of the states of the United States. It does have a lot of limiting power to the federal courts of the general government that are scattered around the country. Matter of fact, first thing any law student learns, these are some of the good things they learn. It's right on the bar exam. And if you don't know this, you won't pass it. Well, it's easy to get. A lot of people don't get it. And that is this. This is the constitutional scheme. The federal governments, or the federal courts, are courts of limited jurisdiction. The state courts are courts of unlimited jurisdiction. The Seventh Amendment does not limit the state courts. Now, let me back up and give a little history of that, because it's kind of fun, because the fellow that wrote this, again, we appreciate him, but he wrote this, and I'm not sure, somebody told me he's from Louisiana. Louisiana. Louisiana is the only state in the United States that's not a common law jurisdiction. The state of Louisiana is not a common law jurisdiction. Why? Because it was settled by Frenchmen from Quebec. Same bunch that are up there now causing trouble. They came down the Mississippi River, down to New Orleans, and settled in the swamps. And we call them Cajuns today. But there were French people all over, and still are. And the reason that isn't a common law jurisdiction is because they settled it, and they were powerfully votaries of the Roman Church, of the Bishop of Rome, and the Roman Church and the Bishop of Rome used the canon law, which is the law of the city, the code of Justinian, put to an ecclesiastic purpose. And so they're comfortable with that, like Mexico is comfortable with it, like South America is comfortable with it, and they're all code of Justinian. That's the code of the Roman Empire, by the way. It authorizes dictatorship, and of course the Church of Rome's comfortable with that too. That's why they do it. Well, that's the way Louisiana was settled, and so they weren't common law jurisdictions. Louisiana did not have jury trials for murder. Murder trials were not jury trials in Louisiana until after 1968. No juries were impaneled in Louisiana until after 1968. Shocking, isn't it? People were sent to the electric chair and hung without a jury, and nobody batted an eye, because the Constitution, everybody knew, wasn't written to limit any of the courts of the states of the United States or the governments of the states of the United States. It was written because that's what they feared. They didn't want a big government in Washington that could tell them what to do. They didn't want a big government to tell them what kind of religion they could have. At least nine of the 13 colonies had state-mandated religious denominations that the government of the state supported with taxpayer dollars. 9 of 13. Now, there's some differences about how many, because depending upon the involvement, how much the government was involved with a particular Christian denomination. But 9 of the 13, and they didn't want the federal government telling them what kind of religion they could forced down people's throats in their state. That's right. And Louisiana didn't want the government in Washington later on, of course, they formed after that, but they didn't want them to tell them how to run their business. And they had, don't tell them, don't tell us we got to have a jury trial when we put a man on trial for murder to hang him or send him to life imprisonment. Finally, one poor soul in Louisiana got convicted of murder, and he appealed, said, I got a right to a trial by jury. Jury. And in 1968, got all the way to the Supreme Court, and they said, well, that's right. That's what Amendment 6 says, so we're going to apply Amendment 6 to the courts of the state of Louisiana and demand a jury trial in capital cases. And as far as I know, the only jury trials that occur in Louisiana are in capital cases. Now, I may be wrong. It may have changed since then. But Louisiana is a funny place, and everybody who's looked at the matter knows that the governor of Louisiana is as powerful as an emperor, and he is. That's no kidding. Well, again, we appreciate these points this fellow's bringing up. Let's try another one. You don't have a natural law republic. You have no way to, if you don't have one, you have no way to determine natural law, no way to express it in a court order. One you learn how to do is this. One learn how to do this. Oh, he means once you learn how to do this, then you will have your republic. You will have no political power. I don't know what that means. I think he was in a hurry when he typed that one. An action at law, he says, is a case in law or equity, Amendment 10, and proceeding in law and equity, Amendment Article 3. That would be federal subject matter jurisdiction. That means the enforcer or the service processor is a federal marshal, not a sheriff. Okay, what you do is go into a federal court with a common law judgment to enforce. Well, that doesn't sound like it's so far off, but I'm not sure why he said it. We've read that one. A civil law sheriff cannot use the common law. Well, that's his statement. He can only obey the common law court order. What's a civil law sheriff? I didn't know there was such an animal. Matter of fact, the office of sheriff is a creature of our common law. The sheriff's not our Constitution of the United States. Doesn't mention the sheriff. Why didn't the Constitution of the United States mention the sheriff? Because the Constitution of the United States was ratified, and the people that ratified it did not want the federal government to have any influence over the states, any power. And so they said, why would they put the word sheriff in the Constitution? The Constitution doesn't have anything to do with the government of the states. That was the intent of the authors of our Constitution. Now, that's why it doesn't have the word sheriff. But our Supreme Court and our federal courts have said on more than one occasion that the sheriff is such an integral, indispensable, inextricable component of our common law tradition that it has to be protected at all costs. Isn't that amazing? Now, those are some of the things that our Constitution doesn't address everything. It certainly doesn't address anything about crimes in the states. We'll get to that in a minute, maybe, and then I'll be done. Self-government is accomplished with a jury trial, as stated by the Seventh Amendment, he says. And again, the Seventh Amendment doesn't apply to state courts. You're wasting your time even thinking about it. The founder, or the ratifiers, I like to call them, we give the founders too much credit. They're not the ones that put the Constitution in place and gave it the final go. It was the ratifiers that did that. The people of the several states, the militiamen, that's what that means. Let's see, this is an education we've got. To give an education to the sheriff. Well, that's good. I like that. Two kinds of jury, he says. Civil law and common law. He says, see Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 37 and 38. I don't care about Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 37 and 38 much. I just know I got a right according to the Constitution of the United States. I got a right. If they take me to federal court, I got a right to trial by jury. In both criminal and non-criminal cases. I don't like to use the word civil because it means city. It's a Latin word for the city law, the civil canon laws of Rome. And it's not what I want to call it because that's not what it is. Well, Maybe there's another one here I can grab. Oh, here's a final one. I'll end with this. How to be enlightened. Read the great books written during the Age of Enlightenment with study guide. How law evolved under Western civilization. That's how he says to be enlightened. And I'm here to tell you that's how you will not be enlightened. You will be polluted. The great books of Western, what was it, the great books of Western civilization. You know, there's a major university in America, and I'll end with this, that made the great books of Western civilization their only curriculum, the only thing they read. That was back in the 1930s. A new university, a relatively new one, University of Chicago. The Great Books Program, I knew a man, now deceased, who took a PhD in that program and became a well-known educator. He died a few years ago. He went there after World War II. He came home and got him a PhD in education. What they do is they take all the time there and they read all of the well-known writings of Western civilization, beginning with Aristotle and Plato and some of those pedophiles, and then they move on up to St. Thomas Aquinas and Socrates. They got him in there too. And the church fathers, and then a whole lot of other people like the philosophers, like Immanuel Kant and Descartes and Galileo, etc., etc., etc. That'll pollute your brain. You haven't got enough time for it either. Nobody does. I mean, if you're going to spend some time reading something, don't get caught up in scholasticism like that. Don't get caught up in logic and the writing of the Greeks, and that's what's destroyed Western civilization. And I'll tell you something else. Our founders never quoted that trash. No, they never quoted that. The only time they ever quoted it was to criticize it and use it as a bad example. What they quoted more than any other source, these are the people that drafted our Constitution. What they quoted any other source was Sir Edward Coke's commentaries on Magna Carta. The best known comments on Magna Carta was Edward Coke. That's who they quoted. Of course, a lot of other people too. Algernon Sidney, whoever heard of him? Tom Jefferson made his book mandatory reading. There's a difference between common law tradition. John was talking about a while ago, he was talking about Jefferson, what he wanted for the symbols, and those two fellows, Horsa and what was it? It started with H. I remember both of them, but I don't remember. I remember you talking about them. I'd heard of them before, but they were a couple of Anglo-Saxon, but they're early practitioners of our common law. The law of the city, the writings of the continent of Europe, that is not our common law. That is the opposite. Ours is the law of the land, theirs the law of the city. Theirs is the law of tyranny, dictatorship. All of the communist nations are under some form of the code of Justinian, always have been. Revolutionary France, and when the blood was running up to the ankles of the horses, that's the law of the city. Bismarck, Hitler, that's the code of Bismarck. That's the German form of the law of the city. Napoleon and the code of Napoleon, that's the French. Well, it's really just the code of the city, the code of Justinian, and Napoleon put his name on it. All of the tyrannies of the world are under that code or some form of it. Ethiopia, from 1944 to 1975, the country of Ethiopia was the only country in the world, still is, I think, the only country in the world that takes the canon law, the Code of Justinian, and its ecclesiastical purpose, and makes it the law of their country. And there was a funny-looking little fellow down there who said he was Jesus Christ reincarnate, and he ruled the country from 1944 to 1975. That's the law of the city. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, CommonLawyer.com. And I thank you very much. My comments are my own. They may or may not be in agreement with the principles of National Liberty Alliance, but they're kind enough to let me say a few words. Back to you, Gerard.
Thank you, Brent. Hey, civil law sheriff. That must be the guys that they're appointing when they get rid of the sheriff. Huh?
You know, it's what's funny. Here's what's funny. When you talk, I talk for a while. Mm-hmm. I never know what's going through people's heads when I'm talking. And then now, of course, when you say something like that, it's humorous, you know, and people are putting things together that I never thought of before and making jokes in their own minds, and I'm sure there's a lot more out there that would be very enlightening if we could hear them all. That's why we like Gerard. I like it when we're on Patriot Soapbox. You are too, and the people chat on the side.
Yeah.
Do you have time to look at any of that?
Well, I have trouble with it because my computers are a little wacky, so I usually have the girls watch it. And Francine will send me on the Zoom chat what somebody says, and then I'll respond to it because I like to engage them. You know, they like that.
Right. No, that's the thing I like about it too. And I'm forever amazed at how clever and intelligent folk are. Just folk. Have an opportunity to say something, and it. Well, it's good for all of us. Well, I'll let you go with it, Gerard. I'm done talking.
Okay.
Thanks.
One of the things I enjoy is that as bad as things are now and as crazy as things are, somebody can still get up and make a joke about it and laugh. That gives me hope.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, well, I'll get some of these guys out of the text chat here. Thanks, Brent. Okay, it looks like we got Lublock, Texas. Well, there's no name, but can you hear me? Oh, here, let me unmute your mic. There you go.
How about that, Maggie?
Lublock, Texas. Who's this?
It's Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah.
Where Buddy Holly was from. My name is Kenneth Preston.
Okay, Kenneth. What's up, Kenneth?
Now, I was curious as to whenever the devolution takes place or whatever. I was going to ask this, John. You might be able to answer, but will the bar certified attorneys and everything? Will the 13th Amendment be corrected, or will it come about?
Ultimately, we have to get back to the Constitution of 1776, the original. And so, yeah, the bar will be corrected because they hid that 13th Amendment. They never gave us the one that was actually ratified. The one they put in was never ratified. So, technically, we're going to go back to a common law, you know, government, and that would definitely, you know, reinstate the original 13th Amendment.
Yeah, the bar must be disbanded. They must be disbanded. And we... here at National Liberty Alliance, under the title of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, will go to the United States Supreme Court and move for that because of treason. All their actions is treason. Now, don't get me wrong. We do need lawyers, educated lawyers, people who are educated, particularly in equity and of course, in law, but particularly equity. Equity gets very complex. And, just take the federal level in itself. There's 57 jurisdictions. So we need lawyers, people who are trained in that knowledge to be able to execute and exercise in the courts of equity all the things that are necessary in order to have our country to move along commercially and politically because, that's what controls the political process and that's what controls, as far as the law is concerned, and that's what controls commercial activity. And that also is on the state level also, so it applies to both because the state, as I mentioned earlier, controls the commercial activity within its state and, of course, its own self as far as the government and the agencies to keep them under control and certain regulations that they must adhere to or codes and different, whatever laws you want to call it, positive law, which is statutes. But we must get rid of it, and we can very easily get rid of it by executing the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment was lawfully ratified. We can prove that. It was done in the days of Jefferson. I believe it was 1818 or somewhere in that neighborhood when it passed and was ratified. So we need to execute that, put it back onto the books, and shut down the Bar Association. And in my opinion, The main leadership, individuals, of course, they need to be tried in a court of law. They were traitors to this country because their purpose, and the upper level knows that the purpose of the bar, they're the people who have been writing all of the legislation and pushing it through Congress and through the courts and controlling the courts. The bar is evil, just totally, totally evil, and it must be gotten rid of.
Everything I can find says that there are none working that are not bar certified, but there used to be, and they've pretty much been weeded out, or they've pretty much taken everything over. So I was very concerned about that. Thank you for the answer.
Right, and you know, look at all judges must leave the bar. All lawyers that want to continue must leave the bar, none of them are qualified to really do anything in a court of law to well, actually they are, because again, to some degree it's common sense and their principles, maxims
should be renounced.
What was that?
Their citizenship should be renounced among with everything else that they mean.
Well, that's why they should not run for Congress or Senate due to that should be an impediment
as well. No offices.
That's right.
To make the correction, anybody in office should leave the bar. If they've been involved in the destruction of our republic in any way, then they need to be tried. If not, then, you know, there's a lot of ignorant people. You know, of course, we the people, many of us are ignorant. I know I was until I started looking into things. And to some degree, I'm still ignorant to many things. Still learning. We're always learning. But people in power and people who are in lawyers, they scratch their head to some degree. They're true believers of things. They're true believers that we're under Roman law. I get that all the time from lawyers. We're under Roman law. They think our country was created in the image of Rome. I mean, that's how bad things are. They think we're a democracy. And we saw tonight that democracy is destructive. It's mob rule. It doesn't do anything. I'm sorry?
It's in the way that they were educated.
Well, of course, yeah. They were educated in unlawfully, and they, you know, look at they believed. They were young. They came out of high school. They went into college. They became lawyers. They had minds full of mush, and they've molded that mush into what they wanted to mold them into. And it takes a while for them to realize, and a lot of them, it's going to take the end of devolution and all of the chaos to be revealed, and the evil to be revealed, and the destruction of who we are as a people and our heritage that's been destroyed, and you know, all that. It's going to take that for them to see. That in itself will be the education, maybe, to repair those lawyers back to a state where they'll be capable of going into a court. The other thing, we the people, we got to stop giving them so much money. My goodness, one-third is ridiculous, okay? Just totally ridiculous. And what really kills me is when they go out and do these large cases, what do they call them?
Class action
lawsuits. Yeah, everybody gets 2 cents, they get a couple of million, you know? I mean, pretty much that's where it ends up being.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next victim here. It looks like, I can't read that. Andromeda Robbie, you have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey there.
Yes.
Oh, hi, how you doing?
Good.
While you're on the subject of sheriffs, if it's okay, I wanted to ask Mr. Brent Wentworth, in no disrespect towards John, but I did want to ask you, have you gotten to addressing the fact, I suppose you may be aware, like in the state of Florida, okay, where I'm recently left there. I was there for over 20 years. This very, very, very serious problem with the fact that the Department of Children and Families, who takes children, is contracted with Broward Sheriff's Office, all right, directly. CPIS is Broward Sheriff's Office in Broward County, Florida, and are wreaking havoc left and right on families. For example, Captain McArdle is deputy sheriff over CPIS. It's a way they have shrewdly contracted the sheriff's office to do their dirty work and to protect their evil. You know what I mean?
Sounds like a conflict of interest to me. You got the sheriff running CPS.
Yes. They did it on purpose to protect.
He's supposed to be protecting the constitutional, you know, the rights, the constitutional rights of people, their unalienable rights. Sure. If he's running it's a conflict. I don't know how they did that, but.
You got one time to tell them that, and they'll threaten you while you're standing in court, and they'll put you out of court because the judges have them under control. You know, so I wanted to know what y'all plan to do about it. Have you addressed it? You know.
Well, just listen. You should know that virtually, other than a handful, all the politicians, all the judges, all the prosecutors, everybody in this system has been handpicked, and they work for the cabal, and they all got to go. Everyone.
Yes.
So that.
Well,
includes,
the attorney general
includes, you know,
is part of
CPS
it.
CPS and any sheriff that's been compromised, and they've been compromised in multiple ways. Either they took China money, or they got them on some kind of pedophilia thing or whatever. They got lots of ways of gaining control over somebody, and they've been doing it for years, and they go right down into the counties and the towns. Look at George Soros spent $2 million to get a sheriff elected in Arizona in a voting district because he knew they were going to cheat, and he knew he needed control of the sheriff because the sheriff could have put an end to it, and he knew that.
Right.
So you think these people don't know common law and the Constitution? They absolutely do, because it tells me, for him to put his money there, that he knows how powerful that office is, he understands the common law. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd like to pipe in a point also that to realize, you know, it's really depressing and disappointing that presidents and judges and many elected individuals, they have no clue that we're a republic, and they keep calling us a democracy. But what's interesting to note is that Barack Obama understands that we were a republic. We read his quote that the end of the republic never looked so good. You know, this was the end. Hillary was to come in, and it was going to be done.
Well, that's what you call.
I mean, if you go to a CPS office right now, it's a BSO emblem on there. If you talk to a CPS worker, they're wearing BSO. It's called BSO for short. BSO attire. They are.
Look,
if you call them, they'll say we're all under one umbrella. Child net, which adopts them off, which sells them off like slaves, and the sheriff takes them and comes accompanies. To the parents' house, with a warrant.
The solution to all these problems is simple. The question is the people willing to take care of the problem themselves? Because the people are the solution, and the people have to get up, step up, and take control. They have to step up, educated, and educate their sheriffs. Mm-hmm. And if the sheriffs don't want to be educated, then they need to remove them from office. They can do that in numerous ways. It sounds like some of the things that the sheriff is doing, and maybe they can indict them. Of course, they'd have to gather some evidence and bring it to the jury and bring it to the sheriff. And if the sheriff sees enough, not actually to the sheriff, because if the sheriff sees enough evidence, and if there's no sheriff there, then you got another problem. If the sheriff is the problem, it's an interesting problem in a sense. But the jury on its own could respond. Mm-hmm. They don't need anybody to tell them anything. The grand jury can indict with or without on their own, their own accords. But the thing is, education is the key. The people have to step up. They have to get educated. They have to go deal with that sheriff. And it'll take 100 to 200 people in a committee of safety that's well organized, and we've laid out a process, and people can add and take away as they feel necessary, but they need to get themselves together and take total control of their government. They do that on a county level, and then they participate on a state and a federal level with other counties within their states and the states and other counties within their states and on the other states on a federal level. They deal with their problem by dealing with their representative, which would be the congressman. And we have to really put back, you know, with the 17th Amendment, we have to give the senators back to the control of the legislators of the states so that they have representation, because right now the states have no representation. Look, education is the key, but people have to be active. If they're not willing to be active, then you're not going to have liberty, you're not going to have your heritage, which is liberty, ultimately.
Right. I do have a question, please.
Yeah, one other question, because we got two other people. Go ahead.
Okay, I want to find out. Do you have on your site anything such as a common law grand jury subpoena? I haven't seen one. Or do you use them?
Who are you looking to subpoena?
Well, I can't think in particular, but various cases involving that do require. They're not going to give the information voluntarily, and it is something that can be subpoenaed, and their attitude as well. Make me, you know, unless you subpoena them.
Look, here's the problem. Even if we did assemble a grand jury, and indicted certain officials, even judges in the Supreme Court. If you want to subpoena something, it requires the sheriff to exercise it, and that's where we fall down. Because we need
I'm asking for the form. Do you have one?
Well, subpoena is very easy. I mean, but the thing is
I've seen a federal one. I wanted to know if you have your, you know, is there such thing?
I don't know if we got any examples of subpoenas, but they're not.
Not particularly. I've been reading. I don't know too much about subpoenas and how they work and how they're written up, but I have been looking at some things recently, and when I get a chance, I'll talk with Brent about that because he's got.
I have used a state subpoena, but I wanted to know concerning the common law because I'm still learning. Is there such thing as that?
Well, of course you can subpoena someone. It's a form, and you can use any form that's existing and any language within that form that you don't like. Take it out. When I file a case, I change the forms. They don't even realize it because the form that I create looks exactly like their form. I just change a few words to make it lawful from my perspective, understanding that I'm going in with a court of record and that a jury trial is in view. And there's certain language, at least here in New York, with the paperwork that you need to file in order to get a court case filed. So I just changed the paperwork. The forms forms are good, okay, because it's generalized. But you can change the wordings and forms to make them work the way you want. And the key thing, as long as it doesn't violate natural law, some right somewhere or somehow, I don't know, write what you want, you know? I'll try to find some options on that. Gerard?
And do you use the same writ of execution for also like when you have won your judgment, like for garnishing wage and bank account as well, or do you use a different form for that?
All you have to do, once you get a case you've had due process and you've shown the due process, it's recorded in the courts and you've got the paper, you go get a judge's signature, you take it down to the sheriff and then that gets executed. It's that simple.
So the sheriff garnishes wages too?
Huh?
The sheriff garnishes wages and bank accounts as well?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they'll go to a bank and take the fixtures right out of a bank. I remember there was a case, Gerard? There was a case not long ago where we had a problem with the bank, and the guy got the sheriff to go out there, and the sheriff started going in to remove computers and everything else, and the bank said, whoa, 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 and they paid up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. But we got to move on.
It's been going on too long, too many years. And they are, the sheriffs are CEPAs. They are CEPAs there. All you're going to do is go there. You'll see.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at it. You have a problem with the sheriffs. You got to get a new sheriff. Gerard, you wanted to respond on some of this. What were you going to say?
I wanted to say if you have a case going in court, you can subpoena witnesses, and it's up to the judge to exercise. You put the subpoena in, and I want to call this witness, that witness. And the judge is the one that signs it and hands it to the sheriff. Mm-hmm. Simple as that.
And in that case, he's really a magistrate. The magistrate signs it. Even if he's a judge, he puts on his magistrate cap.
Right.
And he signs it and puts it forward for execution to the sheriff.
It's not as complicated as you might think it is. There's probably a couple different ways of doing it.
Okay. If a public servant refuses to give their last name,
if they refuse to give
a copy of their oath of office?
Well, you're talking someone elected or someone appointed or someone employed?
Yeah, both. I asked the clerk, for her oath of copy of her oath of office.
You go to the website and get the name because they'll have a title and you'll find out who filled that title.
Clerk manager? No,
go on to the government website of the county or the state or whoever you're talking about. If it's a county level, a state level, a town level.
I asked the head clerk whose name is first and last name there, but refused to
give me. Do you know the title? Do you know the title they're positioned?
Yes, yes.
What's their position?
She's the manager. Her name's not going to be on their site, just only the head clerk. So I wrote to the head clerk. I used the public records, request.
When you say the head clerk, the clerk is an elected official.
Elizabeth Warren.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk is an elected official, okay?
If
you have a person inside the office where the clerk is responsible for, and you're not getting any kind of response, then you hold the elected official responsible. That's the person you hold responsible. If you were dealing with someone that was appointed position, a commissioner or somebody, and you're not getting what you believe is right information or whatever the case may be for that individual, they're not giving you what you want, then you find out who appointed that person. The person who made the appointment is an elected individual, and that's the person that you hold responsible. Okay, so that's how you deal with it. But we got to move on to the next because we're past.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Also, John, check the email I sent you when you get a chance, please.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's see. We got. Hang on, we gotta do.
Yeah, try quick clicking the next button, and the others should drop out. I guess someone just dropped out. Oh, they
didn't. Can you hear me?
There you go.
This is Linda in Virginia.
Yes. Go ahead, Linda.
I'm calling about my situation with the state of Virginia. They're, trying to collect taxes for 2006. What's that, 15 years ago?
That's funny.
Yeah, well, look at what, did they just start communicating with you?
No, I had called, in on a Tuesday and did a sworn statement affidavit with the, the...
Yeah, but did they write a letter? Did the IRS write a letter or something or what?
They sent a letter back to me from a tax consulting service that apparently they have contracted with or rented or...
Yeah, so they're bill collectors is all.
Yeah, probably. Look, don't worry about it. The IRS is going to be gone before the year is out, and so is the Federal Reserve. And Lord willing, we'll be able to get rid of the bar attorneys by that point, which means that, look, the bar attorneys, they have an education. They've been educated, but they have to be re-educated, and I think... Whatever's going to take place, is going to be so, changing, reality changing. I mean, it's just going to be huge. It's going to be an education for everyone, including the lawyers. And the lawyers will come to understand that common law is the law of the land. They'll look into it a little bit. They'll get some information. And things will change in a major way. And we will go forward with the United States Supreme Court forwarding a case, starting the federal district, of course, and move up wherever we got to do to get rid of the bar. They must be abolished. They must go. They must be destroyed.
Well, this is not the IRS. This is the state of Commonwealth of Virginia.
I wouldn't worry about that either for numerous reasons. Number one, they put it all together. Number two, they count on the federal government to really make the collection go through the thing. I've been approached by them before. I've ignored them, and going back 25 years, so they've never bothered me. They're a paper tiger. They have no way to execute anything, and you can defeat it in a court of law. You'll be in a state court, And again, we're going to have courts of justice coming. So all that stuff is unconstitutional. Direct tax is unlawful. End of subject. It's very clear in the Constitution. So I wouldn't worry about it. But what I would say is whenever you get a letter from some agency, a government agency, is always answer it. And I always answer it as an affidavit.
That's my question is I sent them the sworn statement. I sent the Commonwealth of Virginia the sworn statement on it.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm getting an answer not from the Commonwealth of Virginia. I'm getting an answer from some kind of tax consulting service.
Yeah, tell them to go away. Tell them to go away. You don't need to talk to them.
Well, but my thing is this is, you know, I don't feel like I should answer to this tax consulting service because
Absolutely not.
You're right, and there's nothing they can do. And
yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, but I want to hold them accountable, you know, because they have, why is someone that they have contracted with sending me something?
Because they're doing it because it's just another way for them to assault you to try to get you to pay. They got all kinds of games going out. Even the IRS, which is a collection agency. Hold on. Even the IRS, which is a collection agency, hires another collection agency. Matter of fact, I've been approached already by two different agencies of collection working for the IRS, and the IRS works for the Federal Reserve. I mean, it's just a game. They don't get
you this way.
Maybe this group can get the money from you or that group. At this point, don't worry about it. We're at the end game here. I mean, I would answer any letter that comes from a government agency. I would not let that go idle. But if this individual is not part of a government agency, I would keep the letter, but I just wouldn't respond either. So that's the answer to my opinion anyway.
But I was thinking about going back to the Commonwealth of Virginia and saying, why am I getting this letter that you have agency?
Don't you have other things to do? I mean, there's so many things going on. Go ahead, Gerard.
Are they sending you those? Is that company sending you stuff registered mail, or are they just sending it in the mail?
No. And it's worse than that. It's by mail, UPS mail, USPS. And it's not, this letter is not even signed. It has.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything.
Look, they can't prove you got it if it's not registered mail.
Yeah, but my concern about when I did the sworn statement, I gave them 30 days. And so, in a sense, they are answering in 30 days.
What do you expect to get out of this? What are you trying to conclude out of this? I don't understand. You don't have to worry about anything. Look, at the guy, nobody signed the paper. It's meaningless to begin with. It wasn't certified. Again, you can't prove nothing. The state isn't coming back at you. They're sending some lawyer or agency or something that has nothing to do with a government agency. Why do you worry about it? Just forget about it. It's going
to
be gone.
I'm trying to resolve the issue where they say I owe taxes.
You're not going to have to worry about that anymore by the end of this year. Just respond to the government agencies that send you anything. You've already done all that because we've spoken before, and you've already taken care of that business, and wait for them to look. At some point, they're not going to respond no more because it's over. It's done. And that's coming very, very soon. It's got to come before the election. There's no doubt about that.
And that's in November, so.
Yeah.
All right.
So I wouldn't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You get a letter from another government agency concerning the issue. You want to answer that.
You're saying don't do anything then?
That's right. I would just ignore it. Why waste your time?
But am I then going to do the notice and demand?
No.
Well, there's no reason for it right now.
When you respond to them, you're giving them jurisdiction, basically. Don't respond.
Well, wait. The reason is because they're still saying I owe $2,500 in taxes.
I can say you owe me $1 million. What difference does it make?
All you have to do is ask them, look, where is the Form 4490 and Form 56? I mean, it applies to the states as well as to the federal. They have to have you show me where I owe taxes, and you have whoever discovers this, they have to certify it by swearing to it that this document is certified that you owe that kind of money. That'll never happen in a million years. It never has happened as long as the IRS has been around and any of the other agencies, the collection agencies. It never has happened, and it never will. Because that person cannot swear to that on anything. They're making it all up to begin with. They don't know what's real and what's unreal. They have nothing.
Right, it's my word against their word, really.
Oh, don't worry about it at this point. If you wanted,
this was back before we started filing electronically, you know. So, and not only that, they're saying I didn't file. I have submitted that a copy of that filing three different times.
First of
so
all,
how
is,
can they?
There is a statute of limitation, and the only way that it gets defeated is if they can prove that you did willful fraud. They're going to have an awful hard time doing that.
They're not going to. They're not going to be around long enough to deal with it. Just forget about it.
Right.
Don't worry about it. You know, maybe you'll feel comfortable to do a notice and demand and leave it there. That's fine because they're not going to answer that either, and that's fine, okay? Because then you've just solidified and. And the whole thing.
Yeah, I would like to keep building a case against them, you know.
What are you looking at the end game? What are you looking to do? Get.
They keep you know,
what
they're
are you
saying
looking
I
to
owe
get?
This.
What is the accomplishment? The wherefore clause. If you want to take this into a court, what's your wherefore clause going to say? What are you looking for? What damages?
I want this erased and everything associated.
It's going to be erased.
It.
It's not going to exist no more by the end of the year. It's not going to be there no more.
Well, why do you say that?
Because of devolution, because people are going to be arrested. We're going to return back to the Constitution. The Constitution says you cannot, direct taxes is unlawful. That's a direct tax. They cannot, it's an unlawful tax. Always has been. The state will never come out to collect. I'm telling you, I've been involved in this in the state of New York with this, and I'm telling you, they never come out to collect. Their paper titles fall apart right away.
Listen, I did my taxes today. I'm supposed to get like $500 back. They will take that $500 and apply it to this bill.
You can sue them for that, then.
Well, that's what they're doing, and they did it
yeah,
last
well,
year.
I think
small claims court if you want to have that.
Yeah, look at that's going to be settled anyway because once all these criminals, these terrorists are put in jail, okay? They control more than 90% of the economy as far as property and liquidity and all kinds of metals and all this stuff that they own. They control 90% of the economy, at least, I'm sure. All that's going to be taken away from them. We've been robbed. All of us have been robbed. Where do you think the money's going to go? Do you think the federal government is going to take it and use it? That would be unlawful. That would be unjust. No, it's got to go back to the people. We have to be compensated. We have been injured. We are casualties of war. Okay? So you're going to be compensated, and you don't even have to worry too much about it, and you're going to be compensated. You can still go sue, but ultimately I think the lawsuit may be invalid because you will be compensated anyway. I don't know how it's going to look on the other end of that, but... I wouldn't worry too much. If you want to feel comfortable, do a notice and demand and leave it at that. And this way you're protected, if that's how you feel. I understand your concern. But you have to understand, if you don't understand devolution, go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight today's issues. I'm showing it right on the page right now. Come down to devolution, click on devolution, and watch those videos and the information on this page. Okay? This will explain devolution to you, okay? And you'll understand or come to an appreciation and understand that we're going to return to the Constitution. And that's why it's so important for people to get educated so that they can have government by consent. If they're not educated, how can you tell the government what to do if you're not educated to know what to tell them? How can you know if the government is violating the Constitution if you don't know the Constitution? How do you know what the jurisdiction is if you don't understand the jurisdiction? How can you require them to stay within their jurisdiction and not to take over powers that they don't have authority of if you don't know, okay? And it's not all that complex because the Constitution is a very tiny little book to begin with. I mean, state constitutions may be a little involved, but at least the federal one is pretty simple. So, you know... It's up to the people to get that part back. We'll just be back to where we are right now. We'll end up back here again if the people don't step up and take control. It's that simple.
Okay,
but we do have one other person.
No, we lost him.
Oh, okay.
So I'm gonna go while we can.
Oh, well, they're back. Is that who was there?
Oh, maybe. Patrick Henry? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, we'll take the last caller and we'll shut down. All right, anyway, if you want to discuss some more, talk to us next week about it. But you know, don't get too concerned or worried about it.
Okay, Patrick Henry.
He's back. Hey, you guys. Yeah, how you guys been? Good?
Yeah. What's up?
I'm a little puzzled by some things that Brent said, and I'm hoping you can give me some clarification. He was saying something along the lines of the founding fathers never intended for the federal constitution, the U.S. constitution, to govern over the states.
Well, the states are independent. It's a compact that the states came together with. A compact. It's the people. We, the people, ordained and established the constitution. That's therefore, you know, it was finalized by the people ultimately. But the bottom line, though, is the states are independent. But they made a compact to give certain powers to the federal government, and those powers are defined in the Constitution very clearly.
I know it's things like regulating commerce with other countries, defending us during war, that kind of thing, right?
Basically.
Well, okay.
There are six points. You find it in the Constitution, the beginning of the Constitution. There are 6 points that are made, and anything that government does must fulfill one of those 6 points, okay, which is found in, let me just read it very quickly, okay, give me 1 second. Okay,
well,
let me just finish this one reading, and then Brent may want to respond too. But we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice. That's one of the things they're involved for them to do, is to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility. Okay, they have to fulfill one or more of these points in any of their actions. Okay, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And then it goes on to start off, we the people. So to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So it's we the people, but the states are free and independent states. Totally on their own, and they've made a compact to give certain powers to the federal government to deal with us as a nation, ultimately.
And I always like to point out that, when it says Congress can regulate commerce, it doesn't say regulate, it's to make regular. They've misconstrued that.
Yeah, and all you got to do is go to the Federalist Papers, and that'll clarify it.
Well, look, here's my real question, okay? Can we use constitutional case law from Supreme Court cases for arguments in local...
Absolutely.
In local courts, local...
Absolutely. Look,
I misunderstood with Brett.
You're calling it case law. I wouldn't call it case law. I quote the United States Supreme Court all the times whenever they're in obedience, okay, whenever they're in good behavior. And there's a lot of cases where these judges were in good behavior and they said the right thing. And so in order to define something or make clear of a point to the judge, okay, it's not necessarily for the case as a whole, but that judge that thinks that they have some control to bring them back under the chains of the Constitution and the authority which is above them. So the federal judges in the cases of the Constitution, any kind of a violation, has to have, if you go into the federal courts or the federal court is going to make a decision on anything, they have to have jurisdiction. Okay, so you have to have a cause, and the cause generally is usually a violation of an unalienable right, maybe the right of due process, the right of, and a lot of it is due process. I mean, the right of a jury, a grand jury to be indicted, the right of a trial jury to be tried. This is all part of due process. And it's the United States Supreme Court to champion that. When a court in a lower court or in a state court violates that, it's the jurisdiction and the responsibility of the federal district courts or the United States Supreme Court to champion and to correct that court and enforce the right of the people in that court to have due process or whatever the case may be.
Okay. I didn't get that at a local court. I told you about it a year or two ago. I don't want to go over it all again. But, you know, they really screwed me over. They violated my rights repeatedly. I, of course,
welcome to the club.
Yeah, I know, I know.
But
do you think anything
into a federal court? Absolutely.
The after, well, look, I couldn't get anywhere with, you know, the Judicial Tenure Commission or the Attorney Grievance Commission.
They're all corrupt. They're all corrupt. They're all
I know.
Corrupt.
I learned that. They certainly
yeah,
are.
They
are
casualties of war and
directly in a federal court.
Do
and
you
they don't
think
like that. They're scared.
When Trump was in office, he pushed forward the hanging back as an execution, back to hanging, because that's what they deserve. These people, and again, everything, it has to do with how much, you know, you have to prove, you know, in a court of law that they were part of the conspiracy to destroy our republic. So there are different, different penalties for different people involved with this. Some people may get just a few years in jail, some could get 20 years, some could get life, and some could get hung. I mean, again, that's up for the juries to decide and to see how much they were involved and how much they knowingly participated. And for treason, there has to be at least two witnesses. So,
is there a statute of limitations on me going after?
No statute of limitations at all in common law. Because there's
okay.
No statutes, right? There's no statutes in common law, right? So there's no statute of limitations.
Okay, I was wondering.
What limits your case is maybe that it's so old that the people that are witnesses are no longer alive, or they don't remember, or the evidence has faded away. That will limit your case. But if the evidence...
It's two, three years ago. Not that long, really. But.
The evidence is still there. But I'm just making the point. That was the only way that there'd be a limitation of anything is the fact that you can't prove it no longer. And that would be an aged, a really aged case, most likely.
Well, I've still got all the transcripts and everything, which they falsified a number of them. But do you think that I would have better chances of getting justice against these people after this devolution occurred?
I think you're going to be compensated like every other individual in the United States and ultimately throughout the world, because look at, we the people here in the United States aren't the only one injured by these people, okay? And remember, they owned 90% of everything. I mean, they own everything.
Let me give you an example of how corrupt one of these couple judges I dealt with is. I did a people search, one of those ID searches you can do online on her. You know, you pay a monthly fee, you can get info, past addresses, arrest records, all that, etc. I did it on this judge, and these loan documents came up. Her and her husband got a couple loans on a house a couple times in past years for more than $60,000 on the house 1 year, and a few years later, more than $70,000. And I thought I recognized the address of the house. It was so odd, because the address was familiar to me. The reason the address was familiar to me was because I addressed a number of letters, certified mail, with notary public seal and all that on it over and over. It was the frickin' courthouse, man. The woman fucking took a loan. Excuse me.
Oh,
she
please.
Took a loan out on the court building she works in, claiming it as her residence. Who do you think's paying the monthly bill for that loan where she and her husband got the money?
Yeah.
I found the documents. Have you ever heard of? And people I've told about it, everybody's too afraid to get involved with it. And they've said, you know, you want to go to authorities about this.
A lot of people
probably already know that she's done this.
Look at this fear, but there's also a lot of people have no clue on what to do anyway. Even the people who should know don't know, and that's the shame. But we the people need to be educated and take control. And until we do that, we're going to continue to be abused like this. You know, it's time for the abused people to step up and say enough is enough. But remember, we are casualties of war. Compensation will be taken, and there's no real need. There's not going to be anything left to really go after anyway, but you will be compensated. We're all going to be compensated to some a major degree, as a matter of fact, in my opinion, because we're talking trillions of dollars here as far as properties and liquidities and all kinds of things. So.
Well, I hope it comes to pass. I hear this kind of thing from a lot of people.
Well,
so far,
no other way. Just think about this. Just think about this. If we're going to return to the Constitution and get justice back in, and we seize all this property that was stolen, remember what Trump says: when you catch the thief that robbed the jewelry store, you got to give the jewelries back. Okay? Well, you got to give it back. It's got to go. And so the government's going to get it, but what are they going to do with it? They got to give it to the people. Otherwise, we have another unjust government, don't we? It's not going to happen as being unjust. I believe there's no doubt in my mind or heart that that Trump's going to be at the leadership of this whole process.
I hope it happens.
With that, we got to go. It's way worth it.
All right, you guys. Thanks. You have a good night.
Yeah.
Good night.
Bye.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good call.